Matt and Smoke entered the trading post. The main room was shadowy and cavernous, with all sorts of goods hanging on the walls and packed onto the shelves. The saloon was off to the left, with a flimsy-looking wall between it and the rest of the building. A door was cut into that wall, and through the opening, Smoke could see three men in range clothes leaning on a hardwood bar, nursing beers. There was a counter in the back of the trading post, but nobody was behind it. In fact, that part of the building was empty. Smoke walked toward the saloon with Matt right behind him. The cowboys at the bar had to have heard Smoke and Matt approaching him, but they didn't turn around. The three of them weren't packing iron, although there were sheathed Winchesters on the saddles of the horses outside. A balding man with a big gut and handlebar mustaches was behind the bar.
Something I can do for you fellas?
You're the owner?
That's right. Clarence Fisher.
And my name's Smoke Jensen. This is my brother Matt. Pleased to meet you, Mr. Fisher.
No need to get friendly with these fellas, Clarence. They're not going to be alive long enough for it to matter.
What makes you say that?
You don't think Jethro Cain's going to let you live after you killed two of his pet gun wolves, do you?
Cain didn't seem too upset. In fact, he offered us jobs.
That was just for show. He didn't want a gunfight where he might get in the way of a stray bullet. And there's killing to be done. Cain's always a long way from it, even when it's on his orders.
Yeah, especially when it's on his orders.
Wynn's right. Cain's got to have you killed now. He can't afford to have anybody stand up to him and get away with it. His own crew wouldn't like it, and it might give other folks around here too many ideas.
Cain's the big skookum he-wolf in these parts, is he?
You got that right.
You boys don't need to be talking that way. You're going to give these strangers the wrong idea.
You mean the idea that Cain's a land-hogging son of a bitch who means to own the whole Medicine Bow range and everything around it? Sounds to me like that's the right idea, Clarence. The exact right idea. I'm Wynn Cortland. The Double Diamond is my spread, for now. It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Jensen. I've heard of you and your brother both. My friends here are Hank Jimson and Dusty Barnes. They ride for the 7B4. Hank's the foreman.
Yeah, but when you consider the fact that Dusty and me are the only crew left, it ain't that big of a deal. In fact, I was thinking maybe we ought to start swapping out week to week.
Case Plowride owns a 7B4, one of the finest old men you'll ever meet, Mr. Jensen. But he's being crowded out by Cain just like I am. Just like all the other small spreads around here were. The Double Diamond and the 7B4 are about the only ones left. And now the Rafter 9, I reckon. If this fella you brought up here really does take it over.
We didn't bring him. We just came along with him. And he's not going to turn around and go back where he came from. He can't. He doesn't have any choice but to settle here.
Sunk everything he has into the spread, did he? Well, that's a shame, because Cain was right about one thing. The Rafter 9 is one sorry outfit, and has been ever since he saw to it that the waterholes dried up.
Cain did something to the waterholes?
You shouldn't be spreading wild rumors, Wynn. It's not going to do anybody any good.
Relax, Clarence. I know you're going to tell Cain everything we said here. Doesn't matter how much you suck up to him, he's already gunning for us. Why he came in here today dragging those hired killers with him. He thought he finally had his chance for him to prod us into a fight and be done with us.
That's why you're not wearing handguns. You knew you might run into Cain's men here.
Uh-huh. He's had men keeping an eye on us, just waiting for the right time. But we needed some supplies, so we decided to all ride in together.
I'm surprised he hadn't just had you bushwhacked before now.
Yeah, it may come to that. Cain's got political ambitions, though. He figures on being governor someday, so he wants things to look legal. And that's why he won't let his men draw on a fella who's unarmed.
One of these days, he's gonna get tired of waiting, and then we'll all catch a bullet in the back. Old Case will be trapped in his house while it burns down around him. He's been in a wheelchair for the past 10 years since a Mustang threw him and busted his back.
What's this about the waterholes?
Cain hired some smart scientific fella to figure out where the underground river that feeds the springs comes down out of the mountains. Don't ask me how he did it, but after he poked around the foothills for a while, he pointed to a spot and told Cain to dig there. It was on Cain's land, so nobody could stop him. He dug it up, set off some dynamite down there, and the Rafter 9's waterholes all went dry, while Cain's springs were running better than ever. Jack Newton at the Rafter 9 was the only fella around here with a big enough spread to stand up to Cain. The rest of us are just little greasy sack outfits. But with no water and his grass dying and his herd almost wiped out already, there was nothing he could do. He pulled up stakes and left. I'm surprised he sold the place to somebody, knowing how bad off it is. Doesn't seem like something Jack would do.
Maybe he died and his heirs did it. They could have wanted to get something out of the ranch, even if it meant taking advantage of somebody else.
I reckon that could be. Jack's wife always struck me as a hard-hearted sort, even if that ain't a gentlemanly thing to say.
Must be Preacher and the Baron.
Baron?
Baron Friedrich von Hoffmann. He's a German aristocrat.
And that's the unlucky fella who bought the Rafter 9?
Yep, and I reckon we better go tell him just what it is he's bought for himself.
The men talked beside the lead wagon that was now parked in front of the Hawk Creek Station trading post.
This cannot be. It simply cannot.
We'll have to see for ourselves, but I believe what those fellas told us. They don't have any reason to lie about it.
But I was assured that the Rafter 9 had the potential to be one of the finest ranches in Wyoming.
Maybe it would if it had any water, but without any water on the range...
Oh, all for nothing. We came all this way and there's nothing here for us.
Stop that. I don't believe this. Everything will be fine.
We can head on out there and take a look. Maybe things won't be as bad as they seem.
We'd be glad to take you and your friends out to the Rafter 9 so you can take a look-see at the place, Mr. Jensen.
We'd be obliged, Wynn. And call me Smoke. Baron, this is Wynn Cortland, Hank Jemison, and Dusty Barnes. They all work for the 7B4 Ranch.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Is there enough time left to get out to the ranch today?
Should be, if we leave soon.
There's nothing to keep us here. You might want to pick up some supplies, Baron, but you can send somebody in to do that later.
Yes, we'll do that. Everyone, back on the wagons!
Most of the immigrants hadn't heard the bad news yet, but Smoke could see their weariness anyway as they climbed back onto the wagon seats. They'd come a long way. Some of them had to be wondering if their journey was ever going to be over. It would be soon, but probably not the way they had pictured it to be. There was no need for a scout now, since they had the three cowboys to guide the wagon train. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher rode with him in front of the column. Von Hoffmann was riding back alongside the lead wagon.
So that fella's a real honest-to-gosh European baron, eh?
Yep.
Can't you tell from the high and mighty way he acts?
Well, he ain't much like the fellas around here, that's for sure.
It's not my place to go into the whys and wherefores of it. But the Baron's got some bad men gunning for him. Most of them are just hired pistoleros, but their leader is a man called Klaus Berger. He's not an albino, but next thing to it. Long, pale hair, and really dark eyes. Any of you boys seen somebody like that in these parts lately?
That don't sound like anybody I've ever seen, let alone lately.
Klaus Berger? He sounds like a foreigner, too.
He's German, like the Baron, but he speaks good English. I'm told that if you ever see or hear him, you'll never forget him.
What do we do if we see him?
Watch your back. And I'd take it as a personal favor if you'd let one of us know.
We can do that. So, this is a really bad hombre, huh?
Really bad.
And that's got something to do with why the Baron can't go back home, I'll bet. I don't go poking my nose into another fella's business, but it's good to know when there might be a lobo wolf roaming around the vicinity.
That's what I was thinking.
We're obliged for that.
They reached the top of a low rolling hill. Wind reined in. Smoke brought his horse to a stop too, as did the others.
We've been on Rafter 9 range for a while now. There's the ranch headquarters.
While they waited for the wagons to catch up, Smoke studied the layout and the little valley spread before him. It wasn't too promising. There was a good-sized ranch house built out of logs, but it showed signs of abandonment. Some of the windows were broken out, and the front door hung open and crooked on its hinges. That meant varmints had gotten inside, and the place would probably need a lot of cleaning to make it livable again. There were several outbuildings, including a barn and a bunkhouse, but they too were in disrepair. Some of the fence rails had fallen down around the big corral. The vanes of a windmill behind the house turned slowly in the breeze, but the apparatus was badly in need of oiling.
Looks like it could be a nice place with some work.
Yeah, but is it worth it to fix it up if there ain't no water on the spread?
Does the well work?
The last I heard, before Jack Newton pulled out, it did. But it just provides water for the ranch headquarters. There's not enough to irrigate the whole spread, if that's what you're thinking, Smoke.
It's not. Just wanted to make sure these folks would have water if they decided to camp here for a while.
Yeah, they'll be all right. But like Preacher says, what's the point?
That's not up to us to decide.
The Baron trotted his mount up to join him. His hard, plained face grew even more grim as he looked down at the desolate ranch headquarters.
Is that? It is. That's your new home, Baron.
Wynn, Hank, and Dusty headed for their ranches, but not before explaining to Smoke, Matt, and Preacher how to find the half-dozen water holes on the spread. Or where the water holes had been, rather, since they had all dried up. Smoke figured they would take a look at the places tomorrow, since it was getting late in the afternoon now. The inside of the house was just as bad as Smoke feared it would be. Wolves and smaller critters had been in there, and the floor was covered with their droppings. Pieces of furniture that had been left behind by the Newton family had been shredded. Owls were nesting in the rafters. Erica was horrified as she looked around the place. Smoke imagined it was a far cry from the luxury she was accustomed to back in Germany.
The servants will soon put things in order. We've been living in the wagons for weeks now. We can continue living in them for a while.
Come on, Matt. Let's go see if that pump works.
They walked behind the ranch house to the windmill.
Looks like the Baron got snookered all right. Whatever he paid for this outfit, it was too much.
Maybe not. Structurally, the house looks sound enough, and so do the barn and the other outbuildings. They just need some repair work done on them, that's all. And there are several carpenters among the folks who came with him, the Baron said.
Oh, sure, they can do that, but what's the point if they can't raise any stock to make a living? And you can't raise stock without water and grass. You know that, Smoke.
Yeah, I know.
They reached the pump. Smoke took hold of the handle and tried to work it. The mechanism was rusty and stubborn, but it was no match for the strength of Smoke Jensen. In a few minutes, he had the handle moving up and down relatively smoothly. Matt put his ear close to the pipe attached to the pump and listened.
I heard some gurgling. Keep pumping, Smoke.
After a moment, water began to trickle from the pipe. It was slow and muddy at first, but as Smoke continued working the handle, the water flowed faster and it began to clear. It wasn't long before he had a steady stream coming from the pipe to splash on the ground. Matt cupped his hand under the flow.
It's good. That's a break for the Baron anyway.
I'll climb up there and oil that windmill tomorrow. It'll work even better then.
They went back to the house to report that the well still worked and found that Erica had retreated to the wagon after looking around the house.
She's very upset. I tried to tell her that everything will be all right, but I don't think she believed me.
I'll go talk to her.
The Baron's frown turned into a scowl. He obviously still didn't like the idea of Matt paying too much attention to his cousin. But as upset as she was now, the Baron would probably be glad for anybody to comfort her and calm her down. As Matt approached the wagon, he heard Dieter speaking in German. Matt stopped before he got too close. A grimace tugged at the corners of his mouth.
Alles wird gut sein.
Matt had forgotten about Dieter. The young man had been inside the wagon, still recovering from his wounds, when Erica climbed in, all upset about what they had found on the rafter 9. That had given Dieter the perfect opportunity to step in and comfort her. Not that Matt could blame him. Dieter had a good heart. He probably wasn't even thinking about anything other than trying to make Erica feel better. With a shake of his head, Matt started to turn away from the wagon. That was when he saw a flash of something from the corner of his eye. He glanced in the direction of the more rugged hills to the north of the ranch headquarters, and he saw it again. The sun was reflecting off something up there, either glass or metal. The glint was too far away for somebody to be aiming a rifle at him. And that meant that more than likely the reflection came from a telescope or a pair of field glasses. Somebody could be watching the ranch, spying to see when the Baron and his followers arrived. There had only been a tiny hitch in Matt's movements as he spotted the reflection, Maybe not even enough to be visible from that distance, even with the amplification of a telescope or field glasses. He kept going, walking over to where Preacher stood with the blacksmith Rudolph Wolf and several other men. The keen-eyed old mountain man noticed right away that something was bothering Matt.
Let's put a burr into your saddle.
Don't look now, but I believe somebody's up in the hills spying on us.
You reckon it's Burger?
Could be. Or could be one of those gunnies who works for Jethro Kane.
Sounds like you and me ought to take a little ride. We could start back toward the trading post and then loop around once we're out of sight and head up into the hills.
So we can find out just who it is that's skulking around. It's not a bad idea. You'd better tell Smoke what we're doing, though.
Smoke had come out of the ranch house with the Baron. Matt and Preacher walked over to join him.
Somebody with a spyglass up in the hills. Preacher and I figured we'd go find out who it is.
It must be Klaus or one of his men.
Not necessarily. It could be Kane's men.
We agree. Either way, it wouldn't hurt to know.
You're right about that. Just don't get yourself killed or caught. I've got a hunch that before this is over, we're going to need every gun we've got.
The sun was lowering toward the horizon as Matt and Preacher mounted up and headed over the hill to the south on the trail toward Hawk Creek Station. They'd ridden about a mile when they swung back to the east. There were enough ridges and gullies for them to avoid being skylighted as they circled toward the hills where Matt had spotted the sun reflecting off something. The possibility remained that what he had seen was totally innocuous and not connected to the Baron and his party of immigrants. But Matt's instincts told him that wasn't the case, and Smoke and Preacher agreed with him. Matt didn't know this area, but Preacher had been here before. He pointed to a broad stretch of flats.
You know, a bunch of Redskins chased me across there once, more than 40 years ago. They was mad as they could be at me. Ha!
You probably had good reason to be. You must have gotten away from them since you still have your hair.
Yeah, that ugly old gray of mine horse outrun them. He could get up and go when he wanted to.
How many horses have you had over the years that you called horse?
I don't know, and what the hell does it matter anyway? Horse is a perfectly good name for a horse.
And what did you call your dog?
You know good and well I called him Dog. What? You gonna argue that Dog ain't a good name for a dog?
I'm not arguing about anything, just saying it's a mite unusual.
Yeah, well, a man ought to be consistent.
Well, you're that old man. According to Smoke, you haven't changed in the past 20 years, except to get a little older and scragglier.
Scragglier, is it? Huh. I think I'm still a fine figure of a man.
Matt reined in and held up a hand. They were riding along the base of a ridge.
Somebody up there.
It was true. Several men rode along the top of the ridge. Matt and Preacher crowded their horses closer against the steep slope and waited. The riders were headed east. According to what Win Cortland and the other cowboys had told him, that was where Jethro Kane's boxed JK spread was located.
I reckon there ain't no doubt about it now. They're heading for Kane's place. They gotta be his men.
More than likely, but I'd rather get a look at them and be sure. Come on.
Matt turned his horse and started back the direction they had come. They followed the ridge until it petered out. Matt reined in. Leaving his horse ground hitched, Matt edged forward until he could see around a slab of rock that shouldered out from the place where the ridge started.
Can you see them?
Yeah. Three riders about 100 yards away, still heading east. I can't get a good look at them from here, though. Hell, one bunch of hired guns looks pretty much like another.
Yeah, but none of them got long, white hair like Burger, do they?
No, that much I can tell. Burger's not with them. They might be some gunnies he hired, or there might be Kane's men. We're just gonna have to follow them and...
A bullet suddenly chipped rock from the big slab just above Matt's head. He crouched as he twisted in the direction the shot had come from. About 100 yards away rose a small knob covered with scrub brush and aspen. Matt knew that was where the bushwhacker had to be hit.
Son of a buck, I felt the heat on that one.
The old mountain man jerked his Winchester from the saddle boot and wheeled his horse toward the knob.
I'll cover you, Matt.
Preacher started firing toward the hidden rifleman as fast as he could work the Winchester's lever. Matt grabbed his horse's reins and leaped into the saddle.
You go left, I'll go right. Yeah! Yeah!
They split up. Matt and Preacher angled away from each other as they rode toward the knob. That way, the rifleman had to choose to target one or the other of them. He couldn't shoot at both of them, unless there was more than one bushwhacker up there. But so far, there was no sign of that. Matt had only heard one rifle, and now as the bullets kicked up dust around him, he looked over at Preacher, and he didn't see anything similar happening in the vicinity of the old mountain man. It took Matt less than a minute to reach a spot near the base of the knob where the hidden rifleman no longer had a good angle for a shot at him. He dropped from the saddle and left the reins hanging, knowing that the well-trained horse wouldn't stray too far. Matt pulled his own rifle from its sheath and started working his way through the brush. He had a pretty good idea what had happened. The men who'd been watching the Rafter 9 had posted a man on the knob to make sure nobody was watching them. The bushwhacker probably had orders not to open fire unless someone was following the other men. But that was exactly what had happened. And when it became obvious that Matt and Preacher were going to trail the spies, they had made themselves targets. Someone was moving around in the brush somewhere above Matt. But he couldn't just open fire because it could be Preacher up there. Also, the sun was behind the mountains to the west now, and dusky shadows were starting to gather.
Coming your way, Matt!
Matt barely had time to swing his rifle up. The man crashing through the brush had a rifle, too. Matt dropped to one knee. The slug whipped over his head. Matt brought the Winchester to his shoulder and squeezed the trigger. Matt's 44-40 round drilled the meaty part of the man's right thigh. The leg folded up underneath the man. As the bushwhacker fell on his belly, he thrust his rifle toward Matt and fired it one-handed. Matt rolled to the side as the bullet tore through the brush near his head. Preacher appeared behind the man and leveled both his pistols.
Drop it, mister. I'll take plumb pleasure in blowing your damn fool head off.
The man placed the Winchester on the ground in front of him and lifted his hands well away from it.
I can't stand up. My legs shot out from under me.
I reckon you must have done that, Matt. You can get his gun.
Matt got to his feet, came forward, and picked up the rifle. He tossed it out of reach, then did the same with the man's handgun, pulling it from the holster and tossing it after the Winchester. Then he backed off and covered the man with his rifle.
Damn it, ain't you gonna help me? You shot me and now I'm fixing to bleed to death!
Matt had already seen how slowly the blood stain on the man's trouser leg was spreading. He knew the man was in no danger of bleeding to death anytime soon, or even at all, more than likely. But the bushwhacker didn't have to know that, and the wound probably hurt like blazes.
Yeah, you look like you don't have much time left, mister. If you want to make your peace with the good Lord, you better go ahead and do it.
I might not die if you'd help me! Bind up this hole in my leg, for God's sake!
I don't know why I should, since you were doing your best to kill us.
I didn't have any choice! Dick Yancey would have killed me if I hadn't done what he told me!
Yancey, huh? That means you ride for the Box JK.
Yeah, so what? Damn it, mister. You and your friend killed two of our boys. Did you think Kane was going to let you get away with that?
Would you be willing to testify that in a court of law?
Court of law.
You ever see so much blood, Preacher?
Not since the last time I was around for a hog slaughtering.
All right, blast it. I say anything you want in court, Jensen. Just tie up this leg of mine before I pass out.
As the man's head slumped to the ground, Matt leaned his rifle against a tree and strode forward.
Keep him covered, Preacher. But if he tries anything, don't kill him. Just shoot him in the other leg. I don't care if he's ever able to walk again, do you?
Nary a bit.
Matt used his bowie knife to cut away the leg of the man's jeans and expose the wound. The blood flowing from both bullet holes had slowed to a trickle. Matt sliced strips from the tail of the man's shirt and used them to bind up the wound, tying him tightly around the injured thigh.
Still pretty groggy. Let's get him on his feet.
Matt and Preacher were careful as they took hold of the man's arms and lifted him.
We'll have to find his horse. Set him on that stump, and then you can keep an eye on him.
Don't take too long. My trigger fingers get mighty itchy whenever I'm around sneak-shooting polecats like this.
It didn't take Matt long to find a saddled horse tied in some trees behind the knob. He led it back to where he'd left Preacher and the bushwhacker. They lifted the man into the saddle, with Matt doing most of the work.
You'd better be able to stay on that horse. You fall off and you're liable to start those wounds bleeding again. I'm not sure we could save your life a second time.
Don't worry. I'm feeling better now.
Suddenly, a high-powered bullet blew away a part of the man's skull. His body toppled out of the saddle and fell to the ground. The spooked horse leaped away from the limp, gruesome figure, but the bushwhacker's right foot had caught in the stirrup. The horse dragged him through the trees and across the rough ground, slamming the body against tree trunks and making it flop and bounce grotesquely. Matt and Preacher had gone diving for cover before the bushwhacker's body hit the ground. They could estimate the direction the shot had come from, and they put some trees between themselves and the marksman. The slender-trunked aspens didn't provide much cover, but it was better than nothing.
That was a sharps like mine. Sounded like it was 300-400 yards away, too. That varmint's got a good eye. That was some fine shooting with the light fading like this.
At least one of the men we saw earlier must have heard the shots and doubled back. But why shoot their own partner first?
To keep him from talking. We know they got a spyglass of some sort, and they must have looked through it, seen we had the hombre prisoner, and figured there was a chance he'd tell us who was behind it, just like he did. If they only got one shot, they wanted to make sure they got the fellow who could testify against their boss.
That makes sense. They haven't fired again since we went to ground.
No, they probably headed back to Kane's ranch to tell him they got another score to settle with us. Hell, that makes three of them they're going to hold against us, even though we didn't blow out this one's lights ourselves.
Speaking of lights, in another 10 minutes or so, it'll be too dark to see us anymore if they're even still out there. We can head back to the Rafter 9 headquarters then. At least we learn who was spying on us.
And that fellow we caught backed up what Wynn Cortland said about Kane wanting us dead. Of course, we already had a pretty good feeling about that being right.
It's nothing unusual for us in Smoke, is it, Preacher? Somebody wanting us dead, I mean.
Boy, varmints have been gunning for me a whole hell of a lot longer than you've been alive, and I'm still here.
Smoke had heard some shots from the hills to the north, and he had almost gone after him, stopping only when the shots died out quickly. If there was anybody he trusted completely to take care of themselves, it was Matt and Preacher. Whatever the problem was, Smoke was confident they had dealt with it. Then, a while after that, he'd heard the faint echoing boom of a heavy caliber rifle, probably a Sharps from the sound of it. But again, there was only one shot, so Smoke didn't know what to make of it. Meanwhile, the business of setting up camp went on. Baron von Hoffman decided that it would be better to wait for morning to try to start putting things in order around the ranch, a decision that Smoke agreed with. Instead of arranging the wagons in a circle as they'd been doing every night for weeks, this evening they were just parked here and there around the ranch buildings, and the oxen were led into the corral. Fixing those fences was the only repair work that went on today. Smoke supervised that, and since there were plenty of willing workers among the immigrants, it didn't take long to make the corral sturdy enough to hold the massive, stoic creatures. Other men gathered wood and built a large campfire. The circle of light reached out a long way from it once full dark had fallen. Smoke was about to put his saddle back on his horse and go looking for Matt and Preacher when they rode in, leading the horse with a dead man draped over its saddle. After Matt and Preacher dismounted, Matt turned to the horse and started untying the rawhide strips that held the corpse. Von Hoffman came up, bringing several of his men with him. The Baron motioned for them to unload the body.
It was a dead man.
One of Kane's men. He was bird-dogging those hombres who were spying on us. Best we can figure, they work for Kane, too.
I take it you were forced to kill this man?
No, we just wounded him and took him prisoner. His own compadres blew most of his head off with a long-distance shot from a Sharps.
Why in heaven's name would they do that?
To keep him from talking would be my guess.
That's right. We'd already gotten him to admit that he rode for the Box JK and that Kane wants our hides. He even said he'd testify to it in court. Then his pards double-crossed him.
They'll go back to Kane's ranch and tell everybody that the two of you killed him.
Now, sure they will. But they's already gunning for us, so it don't make much difference, does it?
Not much.
I suppose we might as well see to it that this man is buried. Although I doubt that he deserves such consideration. It seems that we are surrounded by enemies. Klaus Berger is still out there somewhere, too.
Smoke didn't doubt that for a second. He made sure the guards were just as diligent as ever, but nothing unusual happened that night. Or for the next week after that. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher all kept their eyes on the hills, but no one seemed to be spying on them. Matt and Preacher scouted on horseback in all four directions and found nothing suspicious. Smoke stayed close to the Rafter 9 and used all the knowledge and expertise he had gained in building the Sugarloaf to try to get the Baron's people off to a good start. He showed them the repairs that needed to be made and explained how to go about them. He put men to work cutting down trees and building a smokehouse, something the ranch was in need of. He oiled the windmill, helped Rudolph Wolf put the blacksmith shop in order, and even toted furniture and supplies into the ranch house once Erica and a number of women had cleaned it from top to bottom. Once she had gotten over her initial shock at the state of the ranch, Erica stiffened her spine and got to work with surprising diligence and toughness. Smoke was impressed with her. It was like she had realized that she had no choice now but to grow up. She was no longer a pampered aristocrat, and she never would be again. That was a good first step to becoming an actual frontier woman. Dieter continued to improve, and while he wasn't in good enough shape yet to handle any of the heavy work, he was willing to take on some of the smaller tasks and proved to be a good hand when it came to carpentry. There were plenty of minor repair jobs that needed to be done around the place, and since it kept him around Erica a lot of the time, that was an added bonus for him. Smoke had a feeling that Matt had lost out on that short-lived competition for the girl's affections. Matt had never been one to take his romances all that seriously. Every time some gal started thinking about settling down with him, his fiddle-footed nature had him rattling his hocks for parts unknown pretty quickly. Yep, the work was going well, and there'd been no trouble with either Klaus Berger or Jethro Kane. But a shadow still loomed over the Rafter 9. No matter what the Baron and his people did, that ranch would never be successful without more water. After a week passed, Smoke, Matt, and Von Hoffman headed into the hills to take a look at the water holes, leaving Preacher in charge at the ranch headquarters.
I greatly appreciate everything you have done for us, Herr Jensen, but you have been away from your ranch for quite a while now. Won't your wife be starting to get concerned about you?
Are you trying to run me off, Baron?
Not at all. As I said, we are greatly in your debt, all three of you men. But you have your own lives, your own responsibilities.
Smoke's got responsibilities. I've got a horse.
Sally knows better than to expect me back at a certain time. She knows that things can come up that you don't expect, like this ranch being in the shape that it's in. Now, mind you, if a couple of months go by without any sign of me, she might be liable to send Pearly and Cal and some of the other boys up here to look for me, but I don't think it'll come to that. When I do start home, I'll stop in to Laramie and send a wire to Big Rock letting her know that I'm on my way.
Oh, very well. I'll certainly take your help as long as you're willing to remain here.
Smoke located the landmarks and followed the trails Wynn Cortland had told him about, and after an hour or so, the three men came to the first water hole. It was bone dry. The bottom of what had been a nice-sized pool had cracked in the sun. Rocks surrounded the water hole. Smoke and Matt examined them, finding no sign of moisture. Smoke had brought along a shovel. He dug down into the hard ground for a ways and then handed the shovel to Matt. The hole got deeper.
No mud, spring that fed this hole is dried up good and proper.
Is there any way to turn the water back in this direction?
Maybe, but we'd have to go onto Kane's range to do it. And if we go to blasting on the box JK, he'd be within his legal rights to shoot us down on sight.
Smoke tipped his head back and looked higher in the mountains that ran in a rugged line from west to east, forming the northern boundary of the vast basin that housed the Rafter 9, the Box JK, and the few smaller ranches that were left. That's where the answer lay, he told himself. Kane had diverted the underground river that fed the springs, but that stream had another end somewhere else. Smoke kept those thoughts to himself for now. He and Matt and Von Hoffman checked the other water holes and found that the situation was the same at all of them. They sat on their horses beside the last of the water holes.
We have water at the ranch from the well. What if we drilled more wells?
You might be able to do that, and you could probably get enough water to support a small herd.
Right now, I have no herd. Perhaps starting small is what we should do.
That's a decent plan. You can probably get somebody to come out from Laramie to drill a couple of wells for you. You might be able to buy some stock there, too. We'll figure on making a trip to town in a week or so. By then, all the repairs should be done.
Very well. As always, I will rely on your guidance, Sir Jensen.
That was an awfully humble thing for the Baron to say. Maybe the frontier was starting to knock some of the pompousness out of him. Van Hoffman rode ahead as they started back toward the ranch headquarters. Smoke hung back a little, and as he expected, Matt joined him.
I reckon you'll be going to Laramie with the Baron to show him the ropes.
That's right. But before we do that, you and I are going to take another little trip, Matt.
A few days after the wagon train had arrived at the ranch, the Baron had sent one of the wagons back down to Hawk Creek Station with orders for the driver to load up on supplies in Clarence Fisher's trading post. Smoke had gone along to make sure the wagon got there and back safely, and also to pick up a few things he needed. The next morning, Smoke and Matt packed some supplies and saddled their horses. When Von Hoffman saw him getting ready to ride, he approached him.
I thought you weren't leaving yet.
We're not. We're just taking a little trip up into the hills to check out an idea of mine. We may be gone for a few days. That's why we're taking along provisions.
Is this something that might help us?
Maybe, but I don't want to talk too much about it just yet. It might not pan out, and I don't want to get everybody's hopes up for no good reason.
I understand. And again, I owe you a debt of gratitude.
We haven't done anything yet.
No, but you are trying to help. That is more than some people would do.
Keep your guard up while we're gone. Listen to Preacher. That old man's mighty canny, and he's got the best instincts for trouble you'll ever find.
Of course. And it's possible we're still being watched, so the two of you should be careful as well. If spies see you ride out alone, they might try to come after you.
They'll be sorry if they do.
Smoke and Matt rode out a few minutes later. They had already explained their plan to Preacher, so there was no need to tell the old mountain man that they were leaving. They were all practical men, and they were not given to sentimental goodbyes. Smoke and Matt kept a close eye on the hills as they rode toward the more rugged terrain. They didn't see any signs of anyone watching them, but the spies could still be up there, being more careful now in their lurking. In all the paperwork that had been sent to Baron Von Hoffman when he concluded the deal to buy the Rafter 9 had been a map of the area showing the boundaries of the ranch. Smoke had spent quite a bit of time poring over that map, studying all the details of the ranch and the surrounding area. This was still open range country to a certain extent, although Washington was making efforts to get people to file legal claims on the land they were using. Jack Newton was one of the ranchers who had filed those claims, and the legal boundaries of the Rafter 9 stretched well up into the hills, even though they were too rugged and rocky to provide any good range. They might provide something else, though.
I reckon I've given up on Erica. Dieter's won her over.
I was thinking the same thing the other day. It's probably for the best. The two of them have a lot in common.
I'm not sure it matters. The Baron's not going to let Dieter marry her.
She's a grown woman. That decision's up to her.
You and I both know things don't always work out that way, Smoke.
They do if the woman's strong-willed enough.
Well, I hope things turn out all right for him. I never figured on settling down just yet anyway.
I never thought you did.
By midday, they had started the climb into the hills, which steadily grew more rugged and eventually turned into a range of small mountains. Smoke knew what he was looking for, the green of vegetation, but it took most of the afternoon to find it. When they did, though, his spirits rose as he studied a line of trees and brush angling through the hills from northwest to southeast. He pointed it out to Matt.
That looks promising, all right, but it'll depend on what we find there.
Smoke knew that, but the lay of the land was good. They climbed higher, aiming for the trees, and a short time later, they came to the stream, which was bordered by brush and aspen as it zigzagged down a hillside. Smoke dismounted and knelt beside the creek. He stuck his hand in the water and felt how cold it was. Cupping his hand, he brought it to his mouth.
Mighty good. Let's see where it goes.
They turned their horses and followed the creek downstream, moving away from it some so they wouldn't have to fight their way through the brush. Late in the afternoon, they came to a spot where a hollow in the rocks had formed a pool. That appeared to be where the creek ended, but Smoke knew that wasn't the case. The flow of water into the pool had to be going somewhere, so that meant that this was where the stream went underground. Assuming it continued in roughly the same direction, that would take its course across a corner of Jethro Cain's land before it entered the Rafter Nine to feed those springs that had formed water holes. And it was in that stretch of boxed JK range that Cain had diverted the water. Now, if Smoke's plan worked, they were going to give Cain a taste of his own medicine. Matt studied the rocky walls of the pool and then stood up in the stirrups to gaze to the south.
There's a little valley that runs right through the middle of the Baron's range. If we can make a hole in that rock, the water ought to work its way down and eventually form a creek that runs across the Rafter Nine.
That's the idea. Maybe it'll start those springs flowing again, or maybe it won't, but at least the Baron will have the creek. Put in a few wells here and there, and in time that'll be enough to water the range again. The Rafter Nine will be able to support some fine herds of cattle in.
It'll take a hell of a lot of hard work to chip out a new course in that rock using picks.
I know. That's why I brought dynamite.
I didn't know you were carrying any of that hellish stuff. I would have ridden a little farther away from you if I had.
It's safe enough as long as you know what you're doing. I've used it on the Sugarloaf. I didn't know if Fisher would have any at the trading post, but I asked him about it when I was there a few days ago. Turns out he keeps a small supply on hand for the prospectors who go up into the mountains looking for gold. I've got a few sticks of it wrapped up in my saddlebags.
Then what are we waiting for? Let's blow that rock wall to smithereens. We'll see how Cain likes it when all his water dries up.
We'll wait until morning to set off the blast. I'd like to place the dynamite so we don't divert all the water, just part of it.
You don't want to do to Cain what he did to that fella Newton?
I don't give a damn about Cain, but his cows didn't do anything wrong, and they don't deserve to die of thirst.
Well, you're right about that. So we're going to make camp here for the night?
That's the plan.
Smoke swung down from the saddle. He spent the rest of the afternoon closely studying the area around the pool, figuring out exactly where he wanted to place the dynamite. He would start out using just one or two sticks of the explosive, he decided, in the hope that would create a big enough gap to provide a sufficient flow of water without diverting the whole stream. Matt gathered wood and built a small fire near the pool, then put a pot of coffee on the boil while he got out a frying pan and a side of bacon. The horses had plenty of water, and there was even some grass growing along the edges of the pool so they could graze. It was a pleasant spot, no doubt about it. When he unsaddled the horses, Smoke took the saddlebag containing the sticks of dynamite and draped it over a rock that was well away from the campfire. That explosive managed the difficult trick of being unstable and hard to set off all at the same time. If you dropped a stick of dynamite and it landed hard enough on a rock, it might blow. On the other hand, you could burn it without it going off, at least sometimes. It was hellish stuff, as Matt had said, but Smoke was confident that it would accomplish their goals.
I wouldn't mind spending some time up here. Probably some pretty good hunting in these hills. Might be some fish higher up in that stream, too.
Well, maybe we'll come back here sometime.
When we don't have to worry as much about bushwhackers?
I didn't see anybody on our trail today. But that doesn't mean they weren't back there, though.
I know. Have you figured out where you're going to put the dynamite?
I think so. I'll have to use a pick to chip out a place for it. But that's all. The dynamite ought to do the rest of the work.
That's fine with me. I swung a pick enough when the two of us were mining down in Colorado when I was just a kid.
Matt reached for the frying pan. Smoke and Matt threw themselves in opposite directions away from the campfire. More shots blasted out as they rolled across the ground out of the circle of light cast by the flames. By the time Smoke came to a stop, his gun was already in his hand without him even having to think about it. He lay on his belly and searched the darkness for muzzle flashes. Whoever had ambushed him had already stopped firing, though.
Did they tag you, Smoke?
Nope. You?
I'm fine. Not sure that frying pan will ever be the same, though.
You see where the shot came from?
Not really. I think it came from over my shoulder somewhere.
Smoke's instincts agreed with Matt's. That would put the gunman somewhere above him in the hills. Or gunmen, rather. This time, at least two guns were searching for Smoke and Matt. Some of the shots were coming pretty close to those saddlebags he had placed on the rock away from the fire. Smoke had half a dozen sticks of dynamite in there, and if a bullet struck him, it might set off all six sticks. That would produce an explosion big enough to blow the pool to Kingdom Come and take Smoke and Matt along with him.
Matt, I'm going to draw them off. When I do, you grab the saddlebags with the dynamite and toss them up in the rocks as far as you can.
Isn't that liable to set it off?
I don't think so. I wrapped them up pretty good, but if they do blow, I'd rather they were further away from us.
You and me both. What happens after that?
We work our way up there and see if we can find the buzzards.
I like the sound of that. Good luck.
You too.
Smoke suddenly surged to his feet. He ran upstream, emptying his Colt in the direction the shots were coming from. Orange spurts of muzzle flame winked at him. Behind him, Matt lunged through the firelight, grabbed the saddlebags from the rock, and whirled around with his arm extended. When he let go, the saddlebags whipped through the air above the pool, spinning around and around and vanishing into the darkness. Matt threw himself back into the shadows. The saddlebags landed high in the rocks that formed the southern wall of the pool, but that was it. No explosion. Matt lay there for a minute. Then he crawled away, taking a different angle up the hillside than the one Smoke had taken. Smoke lay behind a tree and thumbed fresh cartridges into his gun. When all six chambers were filled, he moved again. But this time, he didn't fire, and he used all the stealth at his command not to make any noises as he ghosted through the brush. Rifle shots continued to crack. After a moment, the guns fell silent as the would-be killers realized they didn't have a bead on their targets anymore. Firing now just gave away their own position. That was the beginning of a deadly game played in the dark as Smoke and Matt searched for the men who wanted to kill them. Since their eyes weren't much good under these circumstances, they relied on their ears and even on their noses. It was Smoke's sense of smell that finally led him to his quarry. He homed in on the harsh scent of tobacco that told him one of the men he was after was fond of cheap three-for-a-nickel cheroots. On his belly, Smoke moved closer.
Where do you reckon they went?
How the hell do I know? I can't see in the dark.
Well, neither can I, so I say we get out of here while we still can.
You want to go back to Kane and Yancey and tell them we failed? Hell, Dick's liable to beat us within an inch of our lives if we do that.
Maybe so, but that Smoke and Matt Jensen down there won't even be an inch of our lives left if those two get hold of us.
I wish Hubbard hadn't spotted him riding up here. Then Dick wouldn't have sent us after him.
As far as Smoke could tell, there were only two bushwhackers. That should make his job easy.
Oh, shit! The horses are loose! Grab them!
Smoke seized the opportunity to take advantage of the situation. He lunged to his feet and started toward the men. With the horses causing such a commotion, they wouldn't even hear him coming. A dark figure loomed up in front of him. Smoke brought his gun crashing down on the man's head. That had to be Matt trading shots with the second man. A stray bullet could be just as dangerous as one that was aimed. Smoke dropped to one knee to make himself a smaller target. He put out a hand and felt for the man he had clouted. His fingers touched cloth. He followed the man's arm up to his shoulder. The hombre was on the ground where he had collapsed, out cold.
Somebody help me, please.
That was the second man, not Matt, and it didn't sound like he was pretending. But a trick was always possible, so Smoke didn't move, didn't make a sound, and neither did Matt.
Walt, you gotta do something. I'm shot in the gut.
Smoke waited. It was a little nerve-wracking, kneeling there in the darkness while a few yards away a man spent what was left of his life in pain. When Smoke heard the man's last breath, he knew it was over. No cheap gunman was that good an actor.
Matt, are you hit?
No, I'm fine. What about the other one?
I got him right!
Something smashed into Smoke's stomach with stunning force. He realized in that instant of pain that that man had been shamming, and he had just kicked him in the belly. Agony filled Smoke, and he couldn't get his breath. The gunman rolled, hitting Smoke's legs and knocking him out from under him.
Smoke!
Matt had to know something was wrong, but he couldn't start shooting because he didn't know where Smoke was. Smoke tried to force himself back up, but the desperate blow had been powerful enough to almost paralyze him. His muscles didn't want to work. He made a grab for the bushwhacker, but he missed. The man struggled to his feet and lunged away.
Get him!
Matt bounded down the slope after the gunman. He could track the man by the racket he made. Matt triggered a couple of shots after him, but that just seemed to make the man go faster. Matt wasn't surprised he hadn't hit anything, firing blindly in the dark like that. The campfire he'd built earlier was still burning down by the pool. Matt saw it ahead of him. He was moving so fast he almost lost his balance and wound up skidding and sliding down toward the water. As he caught himself, he spotted the fleeing man on the other side of the pool, clambering over the rocks. Matt lifted his Colt and fired. But just then, the gunman tripped over something and went sprawling. The fall saved his life as Matt's bullet whined over his head. He came back up in a hurry, and now he had a revolver in one hand, and in the other, clutched the thing he had tripped over. The saddlebags full of dynamite. Matt was in the edge of the firelight so the bushwhacker could see him. The man snapped a couple of frantic shots at him, one of which came near his head. But he couldn't return the fire because he might hit the dynamite. Smoke wanted to place the explosive carefully and not just set off a huge blast.
Drop that, you fool! It's dynamite!
The gunman looked down in horror at the saddlebags, then opened his hand and let go of them. The saddlebags fell harmlessly to the ground at the man's feet.
Drop your gun, mister. It's all over. You go to hell!
His gun came up, flame gouting from its muzzle. Matt crouched and returned the fire. He saw his opponent stagger as one of his slugs drove into the man's chest. The man's gun arm sagged as he pressed his other hand to his chest, and blood flowed over his fingers, an even deeper crimson than usual in the firelight. But the man hadn't dropped his gun. and Matt's eyes widened as time seemed to slow down while the barrel tracked closer and closer to the leather bag lying among the rocks. The man hunched over as a death spasm went through him. Even though Matt was too far away to really see it, in his mind's eye, he saw the man's finger squeezing the trigger.
Oh, help!
Matt scrambled away from the pool as fast as he could, and then flame licked from the barrel of the gun. Matt was thrown to the ground as the entire hillside became engulfed in flames. Chunks of rock and broken tree trunks began to pelt down around him like big, hard drops of rain. Some of them struck his arms, back, and legs, and although they stung like blazes, none of them were big enough to do any real harm. The stone wall around the pool must have been completely pulverized by the explosion.
Yeah! Matt! Matt! Where are you? Oh. Matt!
Smoke dug a match out of his pocket and snapped it into life with his thumbnail. By the flickering glare, he spotted a couple of booted feet sticking out from under some blown-down aspens. Hoping that was Matt, Smoke hurried to the trees and shook out the match. He began pulling the broken trunk aside. It didn't take long to uncover the man buried beneath him. Smoke struck another match. Relief flooded through him as the light revealed Matt's face. He was scratched and he was bloody, but he did not seem to be badly hurt. Smoke got an arm around his shoulders and lifted him.
What happened?
All that dynamite went off. You were almost caught in the explosion. From the looks of it, you made it into those trees, and they broke the force of the blast enough to save your life, even though they sort of buried you when they got blown over.
How?
It's all right. It's all right. You'll be fine.
That other bushwhacker.
Did he get away?
He was standing on top of that dynamite when it...
That's all right.
Matt had said enough. If the second gunman had been right on top of the dynamite when it went off, he wouldn't be hightailing it back to the box to JK to tell Jethro Kane what they were doing. In fact, there wouldn't even be enough left of the unlucky varmint to pick up. Dawn revealed what the explosion had done. The pool was gone. The blast had sprayed it all over the hillside, vaporizing it. But the creek still flowed, and with the rock wall that had formed the pool destroyed, there was nothing to stop the water from running on downhill. It was flowing steadily toward the headquarters of the Rafter Nine. Smoke and Matt stood beside the stream, watching it run.
Well, that wasn't exactly what I intended, but since it was one of Kane's men who was responsible for it, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it either.
That's going to make a good creek for the Baron. He may have to have his men dig out a channel for it here and there. I think there's a good chance he can bring it right through the middle of his range.
It'll make a big difference, all right.
But Kane's liable to declare all-out war once he realizes what happened.
I know that too. But if there's got to be a showdown, it's better to have it sooner than later. If Friedrich's going to build this ranch into something and start himself a town too, he doesn't need the shadow of a range war hanging over him.
I guess we'd better let him know what's happened.
Their horses had been far enough away from the blast that they hadn't been injured, although the explosion did spook them and make them run off. The animals were used to gunfire, so it took a lot to make them skittish. Six sticks of dynamite going off qualified as a lot. Smoke had found them without much trouble, though, and brought them back to the former side of the pool where he and Matt had camped. The two men mounted up now and started toward the Rafter 9 headquarters. They were leaving the other bushwhacker's body for the scavengers.
Do you think the hombre meant to pull the trigger and set off the dynamite?
I don't know. He might have. Maybe he figured he could take me to hell with him. Or maybe he just jerked the trigger involuntarily as he was dying. I've seen that happen plenty of times. I don't reckon we'll ever know for sure.
No, and it doesn't matter either. Kane's lost two more men and a big part of his water supply. That's what's important.
They followed the new course that the creek was carving out for itself. From the amount of water that was flowing, Smoke figured the explosion must have closed off the underground route, possibly for good. All that water had to go somewhere, and geography dictated that it was going straight toward the Rafter 9 headquarters. The new creek took some twists and turns along the way, and formed some new pools here and there that would serve as water holes for the stock that Von Hoffman would run on his range. Smoke and Matt soon outdistanced the water, which would take time to work its way across the ranch. But it was coming, and it was going to make all the difference in the world.